Thank you for the lovely music. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So, I guess it was permanent fund, and I bet you've been shopping, right? And when you were in the stores, did you see all of the spider webs and the spiders and the ghosts and the goblins and the pumpkins? Halloween, trick or treat. So, while you're dodging the miniature witches and vampires on Halloween, I want you to remember that Hallowed Eve evolved from the ancient Celtic pagan festival of Samhain. And I brought with me, and I should have had Anne put it up on a flyer, the Celtic, this is Samhain, and you'll notice that it falls right in the middle between winter solstice and fall equinox, because the Celtics only believed that there were two seasons, summer and winter. And so this was considered the beginning of winter and the time when the darkest part of the earth is ours and the earth goes to sleep, and its element is water, and the water is abundant in the rain, and the ground is greedy to soak it all up, and the bears are gathering food and eating, getting prepared for hibernation, and the trees are shedding their leaves, and the apples are harvested, as well as the hazelnuts, and both of those are symbols of this time. It's the time of the end of summer, the beginning of winter. And on the night of Samhain, the veils, they say, the Wiccans tell us, the veils between the earth is the lightest. And it is then that the souls of the dead can pass back and forth between the world of the living and the world of the dead, as well as between the world of the mortals and the world of the fairies. And it is said that the mortals may enter the land of the dead on Halloween. So according to the pagans and the Wiccans, it is time to honor the dead. It is time to honor to the dead and to bring closure to our grieving, to bring closure to our grieving. And so anyone who needed to be abroad would dress up in costumes so the evil spirits wouldn't be able to know who they were. And they would carve turnips. Not pumpkins, but turnips. And they put these gruesome faces on it to scare away the evil spirits. Now, the families would leave food on their doorsteps, and part of it was for the evil spirits, and part of it was for their departed loved ones. And so the belief was, if you didn't leave food for these spirits, that they would play tricks on you. And they also had a custom of handing out soul food. They handed out not the kind of soul food we think of, but soul cakes. And the families handed out those to the poor. The poor would come by and they would get soul cakes. And so it was the beginning of the trick-or-treat thing. It was the practice of giving food to the poor, not candy to the children. But we've kind of morphed it into that. And when we remember that we are a part of nature and that we are not separate from it, it makes sense aligning ourselves, doesn't it, with the cycles of the earth? How many of you are hikers or kayakers or, yeah. And isn't it something when you're out there all alone, just you and nature, how close we feel to God. We feel that sense of connection with the divine like we can't feel it when we're sitting in our living room watching television. In Ecclesiastes 3, it said, "For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under the sun, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to throw away stones and a time to gather stones together. For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven." And that's what these pagan customs were. they were celebrating the seasons. And then I read this and I just thought it was so appropriate. The Borg, the church, came in and it assimilated those customs and created Christian events to coordinate with those times of year to try to get the pagans to quit being pagans and to become Christians. Now we, as religious scientists, we believe in nature. We believe that we are part of nature because God is all there is. And if God is all there is, then we are a part of one another, and we are part of the trees, and we are part of the stones, and we are part of the animals, and we are part of the birds. And we believe that God moves in and through us and in and through all things, don't we? Don't we believe that? I do believe that we are all subject to the changes in nature. You know, if you look at people that have sad and they are affected by the darkness and they require that light to elevate their moods, we are affected by the changes of nature. And the pagans believe that when we align ourselves with nature and the earth, we reinforce that godness that flows through all of us. And I have to say that's true for most of us here today too, that we believe in taking care of the earth, that the earth itself is an entity. We call it Mother Earth. So many of us, well, I don't know about you, but some of us enjoy getting dressed up in Halloween costumes and going to the parties, don't we? And bobbing for apples. And don't you just love those little kids that come to the door and they're about this tall and they have their little basket and they try to remember what it is they're supposed to say when you answer the door? And have you ever noticed the dog never gets tired of answering the door? He hears him come up on the porch, or she hears him come up on the porch, and she's ready. She's waiting for those kids to ring the doorbell. And the kids are just so delighted when you drop something in their bag and you try to figure out what it is they're supposed to be, because sometimes up here particularly, when they have their coats and everything on, it's hard to tell what their costume is supposed to be, isn't it? Well, back in the Celtic times, the poor went from house to house, and they collected food because they were hungry. Now, what I really want to talk to you about is not that custom, but what I want to talk to you about is how you and I trick-or-treat ourselves all year long. All year long we trick-or-treat. I can only speak for me, I guess, but I know that I do it. So this morning when I got up, I put on my minister costume because I was coming, and my minister persona, because I was coming to church today. Well, I put it on almost every day. Sometimes maybe not. But I also have another persona that I put on Monday through Friday when I go to my other job. And it's very interesting because my company is going out of business, and I used to be the supervisor for a bunch of people. My job has morphed as well because I'm only a supervisor for me now because there are no other people. And so it's very interesting. I get to be the employer. I get to be the employee. I get to be the gopher that runs the errands. And I get to be the janitor. You know, I get to be all of those things instead of who I was. And, you know, there's a sense of grief that goes with it when your roles change. I know a number of years ago, my son and his wife were living with me, and they had their baby, and she was about 6 months old, and they decided to move to Texas, and I was living in Washington, and I have to tell you, you've heard the empty nest syndrome thing, and I was grief-stricken. They were taking my baby away from me, and I was really sad until they got to the end of the driveway and suddenly realized after 30 years I had no kids at home anymore and I was free to be whoever I wanted to be instead of being the mother costume that I'd been wearing for the last 30 years. Yeah, right? Isn't it amazing? All of a sudden I had this freedom to do the things I'd not done and to be whoever I wanted to be. That empty nest syndrome didn't last too long for me, although I know it does for some people. And we have all these different masks we wear, and sometimes that bag gets pretty heavy, doesn't it? Trying to decide which mask you have to put on, which costume you have to wear today. Because we wear masks with our friends. We mask the debt that we've incurred to keep up with the Joneses. We don't want anybody to know. My daughter used to ride the school bus with all the kids that lived in the country club. And it was very interesting because I was a single parent. We didn't live in the country club. But what she found out later is this one little girl that lived in the country club, they didn't have any furniture in their house because they couldn't afford it. But you don't know that when you're a kid and you're riding on the bus and you're trying to keep up with the Joneses and the masks that they wear. And isn't that true? And we pretend to be closer to certain of our friends than maybe we really are because of what it might get for us. Now, I know that none of you are guilty of that. And we wear masks at our jobs because we want to hide those imperfections. We don't want people to see that perhaps we are vulnerable. And we act like we know the answers, and then we have to run and look it up. Thank God for Google. You know, we have to run and look it up because we pretend that we are more confident in our position than we really are. And we wear masks at church. Don't we? We get in the car with our partner and we're having this argument. And we argue all the way to church. When we get to the church and we stop, we get out of the car and we put on our smile. And we walk in like there's nothing wrong. It's been a great day because that's our we wear to church mask. And we pretend to be spiritual even when underneath we might be seething. We are afraid if someone knew the real us, they might not like us quite as much because they might find out that we're broken, and we don't want people to do that. And we wear masks at home. We all wear masks at home. Well, I wear masks at home sometimes because someone will say something, and you get this little huff thing, and they'll say, "What's wrong?" You say, "Nothing," because you don't want them to know how badly what they said has hurt your feelings. They've hurt your feelings, and you don't want to share that. We don't necessarily lie to them exactly. We just don't quite tell them the whole truth. We don't want them to know. We don't feel comfortable, some of us. We don't feel comfortable being ourselves because we don't want to be subjected to ridicule. We don't want anyone to make fun of us. My husband calls me his straight man because I'll say things and then I'm really sorry I said whatever it was I said, because he comes back with his Don can attest. We were at dinner one night, and he said, "Oh, I understand him now." And the other mask that we wear in front of strangers and people we've never met because we want people to think, "I've got it all together." Don't I? I want everybody to think I've got it all together, no matter what a shambles may be going on in the background. Huh. That's how we trick or treat ourselves throughout the year. We trick ourselves into believing that those costumes and those masks that we wear are the truth of who we are. We trick ourselves and we forget that God sees behind the masks and he really or she really knows the truth of who we are. And that is the treat of it. We are an individualized expression of the divine, whole, perfect, and complete, warts and all. We are perfect exactly the way we are. We say that a lot here, whole, perfect, and complete. But the truth is, we are divine. We are divine. So how many of you saw the movie Avatar? Yeah, do you like that movie? In that movie, the people greet each other and they say, "I see you." Well, they're not saying, "I see you." They're saying, "I see you, who you really are." Much like Namaste, the God in me greets the God in you. And so I want us to do a little exercise. And so if you're sitting by yourself, I want you to move next to somebody. What I'm going to ask you to do then, now that you've partnered up with someone, is to look into their eyes and silently look beyond their eyes, look into their soul, and say to yourself, who are you really? We're going to look to see their true identity without any assumptions, without any judgments, without anything, just looking into their eyes. Okay, so are you ready? I'll let you know when we're done. And when we're done, I'm going to cue you, and you're going to then say to them, I see you, who you really are. So I'd like to ask you, please, to begin. Who are you really? Don't need to speak, just look into deeply into each other's soul and ask that question, who are you really? Okay, and now let's say to them, I see you, who you really are. Thank you for humoring me. And how was that? Did you feel awkward or uncomfortable? Or did it feel pleasant? Did you feel the love from the other person? And did you notice we are looking beyond appearances? We don't care if they're old or young, fat or thin, black or white, green or purple. We don't care. We're looking beyond the appearances. And isn't that a treat to have someone look beyond the appearance to the truth of who you really are? And isn't that a treat for you, to look beyond the appearance of someone else without passing any kind of judgment and just being in that moment with them? When we're doing that, we're looking to the truth of their being. And when you can recognize the truth of someone else's being, doesn't it make it that much easier to acknowledge and recognize the truth of your own? We aren't putting on them or on ourselves what we think or assume or presume that we need to be or should be. Oftentimes, you'll meet a person and you'll create their identity in your mind before they've even spoken to you. Don't you? By the way they dress, how they carry themselves, whether they appear to be happy or unhappy or grumpy, we form an opinion and we don't know them at all. It could be that they're just very shy and very uncomfortable, and yet we have formed an opinion about those people that they are unfriendly, and we are tricking ourselves. And so when we can move beyond that to looking to the truth of who we are, that is the treat. We get to create in our own mind the truth of who we are. And when we can see each other, the truth of each other, we understand we're all one. We're all part of the whole. There is no them. There's only us. We are part of the divine. We are part of the divine, and that's the treat, to allow ourselves to be a part of the whole, to allow ourselves to let go of appearances, to allow ourselves to move to the truth of our being, light and love, peace and joy, wonder and abundance. The more aware we become of others, the more self-aware we become, the easier it is to set aside those masks of how we should be and be the truth of who we truly are. And sometimes that can be a scary thing, because maybe they won't like me how I really am. Maybe they won't like the truth of me. But then, as we move through this, we get to notice what things feel right and what things feel true and what things feel natural. And we no longer need to carry those costumes with us, because we have a grasp of the truth of our own being. When we know the truth, we know there is good for us, don't we? When we know the truth, that is the trick, to know the truth. And the treat is to know that we are good, and God is good, and we are part of the divine, and we can be no other way. We know that as we move through life, that good that God provides for us, showers abundance upon us when we're open and receptive and ready to receive it. When we know that we are part of that substance, we are not separate from it. You know, we separate ourselves from our substance, and we think our good is something separate from ourselves, when really we're all part of the whole. And so when we don't separate ourselves from that substance, we can look past the appearances and we can see the truth. We can see that we are God-selves, that we are powerful, that we are strong, that we are capable, that we are creative. We can be who we are. And sometimes that's quite a challenge. So offer the world a treat, the gift of you, the gift of who you really are. I see you and I know who you really are. I know you in your sincerity and in your authenticity. In page 333 of The Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes tells us, we have now discovered a unity with the whole on the three sides of life, or from all three modes of expression. We are one with the body of the physical world. We are one with the creative law of the universe in the mental world. And we are one with the Spirit of God in the conscious world. Could we ask for more? Could we ask for more? Would it be possible to be given more than that? We could not ask for more. No freedom, no greater freedom could be given to us. From now on, we shall expand and grow and express only to the degree that we consciously cooperate with the whole. And if you think about that, all of the great mystics have taught the same thing in one form or another, haven't they? They have all taught the same thing, that the soul is on the pathway of experience. The soul is on the pathway of self-discovery, and they have all taught the divinity of man, that we are one with the divine. In Psalms, the Old Testament, 82:6, it says, I said, ye are gods. Ye are the sons of the Most High. The Old Testament. And in the book of John, Jesus asked, is it not written in your law that ye are gods? And somehow we seem to have ignored that part. So your homework for this week, you have homework for this week, only it involves a mirror. And I want you to look into the eyes in that mirror, into the soul, into the truth of who you really are. I see you, and I know who you really are, and it is good. It is good. And I love you, and I bless you. And let us pray.